slow and bone cold. Before I could secure the knot, I rushed them back into my pockets a second time. "Come on," I muttered, my teeth chattering. Over the next few moments, the wind picked up and moody clouds massed overhead. A storm was blowing in. As I sunk deep into my jacket and drew my hands high into my coat sleeves, I realized the wind wasn't going to let up. If I was planning to tie my prayer flags, I had to do it then, and fast. I took a deep breath, gathered my energy, and leapt to my feet. But as I did, a great gust of wind tore the string of prayer flags out of my hand and tossed them into the sky like a kite. Norbu, my Bhutanese guide, hurried over. "I will help you." "Please," I managed. "I'm freezing." Like a cowboy about to tame a colt, Norbu stood back a moment, watching the flags bucking wildly. It was this loose end of the rope I had come to Bhutan to contemplate, for it seemed to represent all the loose ends of my life that were, at once, alluring and elusive. All the dreams that invited my reach, but then retreated the moment I did. The moment the wind died, Norbu pounced, and as he wrestled with the prayer flags, I sat back and watched. "Why couldn't I do that?" I lamented softly to myself. As Norbu tied the second end of my rope, I couldn't help but feel frustrated. But in my defense, I hadn't yet hiked 216 miles of the most beautiful and challenging trail on earth, or visited time-lost villages and hidden valleys. I hadn't yet sat with a spell-spitting shaman or truly understood the divine madman's precept that whatever happens is the path of release. Despite the glory of my surroundings, I was an exile that morning, for I hadn't yet stood beneath Blossom Rain and discovered its secret of lasting grace. But little did I know, as I grabbed my backpack and started down the trail that morning, I was about to. Chapter 2. Bhutan is a small country, roughly half the size of Indiana, squeezed between Tibet and India. The first thing to understand about Bhutan is that nothing is black and white. There are varying names, meanings, measurements, and explanations for everything, beginning with the name Bhutan itself. Some scholars suggest the name Bhutan is derived from the Sanskrit term Bhotsanta, which translates to the end of the land of the boats, boats being Tibetans. Others believe the name came from the phrase Bhutan, which is Sanskrit for highlands. The Bhutanese call themselves Drukpas, dragon people, and their country Drukyul, or land of the thunder dragon, named after the loud thunder dragon that routinely shakes Bhutan's skies and protects its people. Historically, Bhutan has also been known by the names of Lomen Kazi, southern land of four approaches, Lo Menjun, southern land of medicinal herbs, and most ominously as Lo Man, southern land of darkness. Based upon ancient Buddhist statues, weapons, and tools, scholars believe Bhutan may have been populated as early as 2000 BC. Although the first written records of the country begin with the spontaneous appearance of the Buddhist saint Guru Rinpoche in AD 746. Until 1960, Bhutan had few roads and no schools, hospitals, telephones, postal system, or national currency, and it followed a strict policy of isolationism until 1974. Now, Bhutan has the distinctions of governing by a policy of gross national happiness, not having a single traffic light in the entire country, being the last Buddhist kingdom in the Himalayas, and having one of the scariest airport landings in the world. My adventure began when I was checking in for my flight to Bhutan from Bangkok. Bhutan's only airport, in Paro, is serviced by Druk Air, Bhutan's national airline, which has a very strict weight policy of 44 pounds of checked luggage per person. I thought the weight